Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm excited about this week's show. We've got a topic we haven't touched on a whole lot over the last 10 years of the Disaster Podcast. I think we've maybe touched on it once or twice with Joe on a clinical topic, but it's going to be something we're going to dig into in a little more depth tonight, especially for a special class of patients, and we'll get into that here in just a second. But of course, everybody knows we can't have a show without my co-host, Sam. So Sam, how you doing?
Well, it'd be lovely if it wasn't snowing in Colorado. It seemed to have missed the fact that it's spring. And it was a thrill to look out the window this morning and see everything coated with snow again. It's like, what the heck? Oh, well, that's Colorado for you.
Yeah, and Kyle's not here. We can't even blame him for it.
I know. We usually blame Kyle for any snow-related incidents. But, you know, that's Colorado. How are things in Memphis, Dr. Joe?
Hi, everybody. Well, we're doing well. It's been a nice spring-type day, so kind of windy. Storms rolling through, but fairly limited and nothing really significant.
Good. Well, I don't know if there's any major incidents. I don't know. There's been a lot of tornadoes lately, though, Jamie. I suppose you've heard about those, huh?
Yeah, there's a bunch of rough weather that's come across the country, stretching from the upper Midwest down into Oklahoma, parts of Texas, I know into Missouri and Kansas. And, you know, it's that tornado kind time of year, I think. If Dan or Kyle were here, I'm sure they would fill us in on the exact details. But I know that there has been some, you know, weather patterns that are going to be pretty consistently bringing some severe weather to different parts of the country over the next coming weeks as things heat up. And that's just what happens is, you know, we have temperature gradients. They've taught us over the years, temperature gradients mean severe weather. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, Jamie and I have become like baby meteorologists.
Well, you know, you talk to one every week. You kind of learn the stuff.
You know, they've taught us a lot, and I guess they've gotten a lot out of our material and our guests, so it works really well. But this is a double doc episode. We have our Dr. Joe, of course, and we have our guest, who's also a physician. He's a former U.S. Navy Medical Corps Lieutenant Commander who served with the Chemical Biological Incident Response Force and was a Weapons of Mass Destruction Medical Specialist. So he's done a lot of stuff. So, Matt, you want to give us a little background about yourself and how you started doing what you're doing?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I first got interested in this. I graduated med school in 2011. I did my residency in emergency medicine at University of Kentucky in Lexington. And I got started sort of in the, you know, CBRN world with the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program, actually, because we would do those drills with the university in partnership with the Bluegrass Army Depot, where they had all those chemical weapons stored that have just recently completed being destroyed. But got started with that, then went on active duty with the Navy after residency and went to Japan for a couple of years, which that was, you know, starting in 2014, you know, so that was not too long after the Fukushima incident. So doing a lot of disaster preparedness with them. And then from Japan, went to Maryland to serve with the Chemical Biological Incident Response Force and did that for just a little over 2 years. Got to go to all of the, you know, famous training sites there, you know, Oak Ridge and Aberdeen Proving Ground and USAMRID and all those things to train for that responsibility. And, you know, got to do a lot of cool stuff with some great people and learn quite a bit. So got started that way with my background, and then now trying to help pass that knowledge on to other people.
Yeah, yeah, I used to live down near Aberdeen Proving Ground. We moved up a few miles north of there into Cecil County since then. But I remember when we first moved there, they still had the mustard agent. It's stored at the Edgewood Arsenal. And I remember getting warning briefings from the county every year, you know, what to do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, even at Bluegrass Army Depot, you know, they had the, you know, the internal container, and every once in a while you would hear, it's like, oh, you know, they had a leak. It was inside the building. It didn't get out into the public, but, you know, there were still, you know, safety concerns with those things, even just a few years ago. So.
And I remember back when they gave us the Mark One kits,
mm-hmm. yeah.
just in case kits. Mm-hmm. I don't think they still carry them around, but it was a big deal at the time. So, mm-hmm. Joe, how often do you run into Seaburn WMD issues in your USAR deployments?
Well, all the USAR teams are trained and equipped to actually work in a WMD environment. So we, you know, we carry a lot of the antidote and treatment medications with us, at least in small supplies, as well as a lot of the protective stuff that we might need to actually work.
Do you have anything specifically for pediatrics? Because that's an area where he has excelled, which, you know, you don't think so much about kids in that situation, but they're certainly going to be affected.
Yeah, and potentially significantly more affected, depending on which actual agent you're talking about and its method of exposure, whether that's through the skin or inhaled or ingested or whatever. So the short answer is no, we don't. You know, we would have to spend quite a bit of time looking up the individual medications and then calculating a weight-based dose for all of those kids, which would obviously be quite time-consuming.
So, Matt, how did your interest in children come up alongside your Seaburn WMD training?
Well, you know, we would do a lot of drills and, you know, even some of these exercises, they would actually hire, you know, actors and things like that. And we would have simulated pediatric patients and, you know, they would say, okay, you know, we got this many children coming in. And then I was faced with that exact problem that Dr. Holly was just mentioning there, where now I have to either try to do the math in my head or some other way to calculate these doses. And it quickly became apparent to me that if this was a true mass casualty situation, thousands and thousands of patients, that that is not an efficient way of doing that and introduces the possibility of, you know, errors in your math and slowing yourself down. So, you know, I first became interested in this because of that and knowing that, you know, in my role as, you know, the senior medical officer of one of the initial response forces at Seaworth, if something like that was to happen, I was the guy that they were going to call and send. It was going to be me and sailors and Marines, you know, that were my team that would be, you know, the first people out the door probably from the federal response to go to one of these incidents. So, you know, it initially started as just my handwritten notes of what to do if, and that over the years, you know, after I got out of the Navy, I tried to compile that and organize it in a way that, you know, anyone with a emergency medical background, first responders, you know, docs, nurses, could see this and, you know, recognize it, use it, and apply the knowledge that I got during that training that, you know, most people won't have the opportunity to get. So it's just that kind of just-in-time resource to arm people with the knowledge that they would have to treat patients in that kind of situation, you know, if that was to happen.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than a high-stress and high-risk situation to be having to sit there and figure out a bunch of math, especially right. when it comes to children, because, you know, right. want to overdose them or underdose them. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough with regular meds.
Right, or even argue about, you know, what meds to give and who can receive what and those kind of things. So my hope is that, you know, having this in writing will, you know, arm people with the knowledge and help boost their confidence in applying that knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jamie, how, you know, when you worked as a volunteer firefighter or a medic, what kind of situations did you run into?
It's interesting because, you know, in our area here in our part of Maryland, it's very rural. And I was looking down the list of things here, nerve agents and organophosphates, and we actually probably at least once a year have some sort of organophosphate poisoning involving a farmer or a farm worker. And we actually had a situation, it's been maybe 10 years ago with an Amish farm, and they were working with organophosphates, and there were several pediatric patients involved. And it was, when you think about it, it wasn't thousands of patients, but three or four organophosphate poisoning patients can overwhelm a small rural emergency service very quickly. And and we ran into, those exact problems of, what are we going to do? All we had was atropine to deal with it basically at the time and get them to the hospital as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And, you get into those situations and you can go through a tremendous amount of atropine really quickly when you have multiple patients.
Yes. That was our exact problem. We had to call in extra units just to get more atropine.
Sure. Yeah. And, that's something I try to address, with my product here is to not only give you the doses, but then how often can you redose? What are your alternative methods? Can you go IV? Can you go IM? Can you go IO? Those kind of things. And then addition to that, we talk about, sticking with organophosphates, your benzodiazepines, if you run out of, lorazepam or diazepam, can you use midazolam? Yes, you can. Then how would you dose that? So trying to not only, give you sort of that first line knowledge, but then your options as well. So if plan A fails or you run out of one medication, what can you do?
Well, this is aimed at, I assume, field people like paramedics and also ER physicians, because when they don't see this. I don't know, Joe, how often do you see something like this in the ER when you're working the ER?
Well, it varies. Some of the more exotic stuff obviously is incredibly rare. We're not likely to see, inhalational anthrax very often. Although some of these things do pop up around the country. And as Jamie just mentioned, an organophosphate poisoning, certainly in rural communities with lots of agriculture, are quite common. And that would be very similar to a nerve agent exposure that you might see otherwise. So while not classically in the WMD mode, we do see these kind of events pop up surprisingly often, and it varies a lot depending on where you practice.
And with that being the case, even outside of sort of the ordinary agricultural events and things like that, there have been frequently in the news all kinds of incidents. It doesn't necessarily have to be a large scale thing, but I'm sure we all remember the envelopes of anthrax being mailed out, and different radiological incidents throughout the years. It's not something that we run into every day, which that's part of the reason I wanted to create a product that has the reference for those kind of things, but because it's not knowledge you use every day, that's going to be in the front of your mind.
Exactly.
So that's something that you can reference in that situation to refresh your memory even.
So why don't you give us more detail on the product? If Dr. Joe was in the ER and something came in, especially with a pediatric patient, what would he have in front of him?
Right. So, my product and my company is called Cladis Medical. It's Cladis. And so my website is cladismed.com, Cladismed.com. So what the product is essentially is, I'm sure everyone's familiar with the work of Dr. Broslow and Dr. Luton, the color-coded, length-based, essentially a measuring tape that has different heights and weights and color-coded onto it. So it uses that same scale derived from the pediatric growth curves, same sort of color-coding system. Basically you would, hold one end at the, patient's head, you measure to their feet, and where their, length falls on that chart, that gives you a pre-calculated dose for that patient. So you could take this and unfold that next to that patient, just like you would with, your other pediatric products that use that Broslow-Luton method. And that would have your dose already calculated for you. But in addition to that, it also has the dosage form that it comes in, what the weight-based dose is that's actually on the product. So if you didn't know the patient's weight, if you're in a small-scale scenario where you only had one or two patients, you had time to get a weight, that's on there. And then, like I say, a lot of tips and tricks for, you know, administering those medications.
So we're talking about chemical, biological, and radiological / nuclear agents. That's a lot of different kinds of medications. So
right. Yeah. So the product is split up into two tapes. So there's so much, you know, with biological that I did, that is one tape on its own front and back. And then the other tape is chemical on one side, biological on the other, or radiological on the other, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So it's actually with my product, if you were to purchase it, you get it comes in a plastic sleeve that has an instruction card, and it actually comes with two full length tapes.
So you talked about weight-based dosing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it also explains the best way to administer the med, mm-hmm. and what the pre-calculated doses are for children of different sizes, correct?
Right, correct.
What do you think, Joe?
Oh, I love the idea, right? I mean, that's basically what you need. You pull that out, you got the child laying there in front of you, you quickly get all the dosing that you need. Everything's all in the same spot, no math errors. It's all pre-calculated. And I love the idea that it's in a format that emergency physicians and pediatric emergency physicians are extremely familiar with and use as part of their practice, as well as EMS, for a long time now. So really smart way of doing things.
Yeah. And it's tried and true. It's been used since the 1980s. You know, it's very well validated, and even, you know, in more recent studies, you know, and within the last, you know, 10 years or so, when you compare that method, you know, the Braslow-Luton method, to a lot of other products that are out there, you know, it continues to be the best. So, you know, using that, you know, and I wanted it to be something that would be instantly recognizable and familiar to anybody that might put their hands on it, you know, and I think, you know, we probably agree that, you know, everyone who's worked in emergency medicine, emergency medical services, is familiar with that color coding system. So, just to try to cut down on the learning curve, you know, in a high stress situation, I think is a added benefit.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you're dealing with something that's basically unfamiliar, cause you don't see it all the time.
Right.
Like I said, that's kind of high stress for anybody. Jamie, can you see something like this being beneficial?
I talk about, you know, we also have a nuclear facility close by at Peach Bottom, just up the road in Pennsylvania, that overlaps its exposure area into our region, and so there's, you know, there's that possibility that there are several elementary schools that are inside that zone.
Yeah.
So you could imagine if there was a major release at the nuclear plant, you know, of some sort, radiological release that could get into the community, it would be very important to have a resource to make sure that you're taking care of everybody, including the pediatric patients, as rapidly and as efficiently as possible.
Yeah. And so, you know, using that scenario, right, you know, potassium iodide, you know, on my product, it mentions on there, you know, potassium iodide usually comes in 65 milligram or 130 milligram tablets, but you can also take 130 milligrams of those, you know, tablets, grind that up, dissolve it into 20 milliliters of water, mix that with 20 milliliters of juice or soda or something like that, and then you get a 16.26 milligram per 5 ml oral solution that you can then give to the children so that they're not having to swallow pills or any of those kind of things in that situation. So that is, you know, just one of the sort of medication dosage, you know, hacks or pro tips or whatever you want to call it, that's on the product, that can really, help you treat more patients more efficiently, more accurately in this kind of situation, and not struggle with, you know, for example, kids having to swallow pills. Now you've got a liquid form, you can hand them a cup of juice and, you know, they can just have that. And it's a lot less traumatic for everyone.
Yeah. And what a great idea to have it all measured out. So, you know, I need 20 mils of this. I need 20 mils of this, and I need to grind this up. And boy, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, especially in a case where you need it right away, that's cutting a lot of time off trying to figure all of this out while the kid's laying there, you know, in dire straits.
Right. And going on to other things, you know, I mean, going back to, you know, inhalational anthrax, you know, I have information on there not only for, you know, inhalational and systemic anthrax with or without meningitis, but also for the post-exposure prophylaxis. And so, you know, Dr. Holly, you know, you would not ordinarily give, you know, ciprofloxacin or doxycycline to small children, but they are actually FDA approved for post-exposure prophylaxis to inhalational anthrax in kids greater than 1 month old. So a lot of people, you know, coming from that emergency physician background, know you would not ordinarily give those antibiotics to children, but in that situation, it has actually been FDA cleared for kids over 1 month. So that's there in writing for that person on the ground treating that patient to have that information so they can know this is okay to do. This is actually what you should do in this situation. I know it seems counterintuitive and kind of goes against some of our training, you know, we wouldn't, you know, give those antibiotics to a kid for, you know, a run of the mill infection, but for that situation, it is a good choice. And in addition to that, you know, there's medications on here that most people probably haven't even heard of that you're not going to be able to, you know, your ordinary hospital or pharmacy may not have, you know, they have monoclonal antibody therapies for anthrax now. So it has dosing guidelines for those too, because if you're in that situation where it's a mass casualty event, you know, you're calling for medications from, you know, Strategic National Stockpile or whatever you're getting your medications from, you know, those medications are on there too, so that you could administer those quickly.
What do you think, Joe?
Well, it's fantastic. I was actually, I had actually forgotten what he just said. So thank you for the reminder. Because you're right, it's completely counterintuitive. And obviously, if you're literally dealing with the level of stress that would be involved in a potential WMD incident anyway, where everybody in the ED is, and, you know, administration are all going crazy because of the disease process that's now in your hospital, et cetera. But that did lead me to think of another question. And that is, how often are these updated? Is this an annual thing that stays on top of latest recommendations and all that sort of stuff?
I mean, yeah, I have been updating it, you know, as I've been creating it, basically. But yeah, that'll be, you know, my task, you know, with this product is to stay on top of those recommendations. But, you know, for example, you know, some of the recommendations for smallpox had been updated, you know, pretty recently, like some of those medications, you know, a lot of the pediatric dosing wasn't really available, you know. So that was something that, you know, as I was kind of creating this and trying to get it off the ground, I had to kind of go back and update and edit, you know. So, yeah, you know, staying on top of the literature and trying to keep this up to date, you know, I'm sure there'll be, you know, I'll be releasing new editions of this periodically. I don't know how often that'll be, but yeah, for sure.
You got a job for life now.
I hope so.
Joe, I could see the potential of using something like this in one of your experiences, Paragon does, and seeing how it works in that environment.
I think you're right, Sam. I'd love to be able to show this off when we're, you know, when we're doing one of our big disaster simulation deals. For sure. And, you know, as something else I thought about is the value of this in the field, particularly if it is a large scale, well, not even large scale, if it is a WMD event that has concerns over it being intentionally done, then you have a lot of people in the field trying to, you know, push the envelope forward on initiating therapies and all that sort of stuff. So being able to have this in a, you know, a forward medical base of operations or EMS unit, et cetera, would be incredibly valuable.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to create this, because, you know, you know, if there's a situation where there's, you know, we're looking at tens of thousands of patients, you know, there's not going to be enough doctors and nurses, you know, to supervise administering all these medications. So it's going to get pressed down to, you know, paramedics and EMTs and you know, people who may not be familiar with administering these medications. So to arm them with that knowledge is another, you know, goal of my product here, and another benefit of having this reference. But, you know, I've seen even in drills that we did in the military, you know, working with other agencies and things, you know, for example, going back to the kids with, you know, antibiotics, you know, Cipro and Doxy and small children, you'll always have that one person in the drill who says, no, you can't do that. Like, yes, I can. You're, you know, let me show you right here. This is in writing that says that we can do this. So it always seems like there's always kind of that one person, like you were saying, if you're in a hospital and something like this has happened, you know, and everyone's kind of panicking, you know, there's a lot of benefit to being able to show somebody something in writing that says that you can do this, you know.
Oh, no question about that. I mean, just the reassurance that you're doing the right thing on the spot, and you don't have to go looking for it. It's right there in front of you. You know, I mean, that's just, wow. The time and effort saving here is huge for one of these incidents.
And Matt, what you're saying too, is there's a lot of people that might have been familiar with this in a previous form, in a previous decade.
Right.
Things have changed. So Joe's question about updating this is very relevant. Mm-hmm. But then you've got to convince these people, no, it's not the CDC recommendation anymore. So
right.
It is, and I could show it to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jamie, you and I, you know, we were talking earlier about what we've learned from the meteorologists. We learn something new from every one of our guests. And this is certainly something both the Seaburn WMD, and we don't talk enough about pediatrics. And so we got kind of a exactly what we needed tonight, because that covered both.
Well, and we've discussed before, you know, that so many of the things we learn are based around handling and dealing with adult patients. And unless you're familiar or used to dealing with pediatric patients on a regular basis, it can definitely encourage that additional pucker factor, as we like to say.
I mean, I go to these trainings, you know, when in the military, and, you know, we talk about what we're going to do, you know, how to treat this or that incident. And then I would say, well, what about the kids? And, you know, you could just see people wince and grimace, you know,
I would be one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. You know, getting that response over and over and over in so many different training environments is kind of what inspired me to take on this project, honestly. That coupled with the fact that, you know, I was the one standing in those boots that was going to be sent. So
definitely. So where can folks find this again if they want to go and look it up online?
Yeah, so my website is cladismed.com, CladisMed.com. You know, information about the product there, you know, and like I say, it covers a lot more than we were, you know, able to talk about tonight. But I mean, dozens of radioisotopes, dozens of medications, anthrax, plague, tularemia, smallpox, you know, brucellosis, Q fever, glanders, botulism. I mean, you know, it's cyanide, you know, organophosphates, nerve agents. It's pretty comprehensive. And, I think it's a great resource. I really hope that we can help get it out to the people who, you know, although we hope they never need it, it'll be there for them if they do. So, CladisMed.com, you know, free shipping in the United States. Now, my website is pretty rudimentary. It's not set up to handle international orders. But if any of you have, you know, international listeners, please, if you're interested in the product, please send me an email, msmith, M-S-M-I-T-H, msmith@cladismed.com, and we can find a way to get it to you. And, you know, if you have any international listeners, you know, I've got translation services available too. So if we need to get it translated into other languages, that's something that we're prepared to do. So I'm really hoping that this can be something that goes worldwide and can, you know, protect kids everywhere.
Well, and I just, you know, thinking about international, we've had several episodes where we've talked to people training and doing situations over in Ukraine. Where this could be a definite problem and definite concern for responders and medical providers there.
I mean, when I was first getting started at Seaburn, it was, you know, ISIS in Syria, you know, and all those chemical attacks over there.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because I have a nonprofit, Matt, that it deals with the healthcare system in Ukraine during this war. So that would definitely be a good start. If you don't have anything to do, translate that into Ukrainian and they.
For sure. Well, Matt, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it for reaching out to us. And it's a topic we haven't done a lot of coverage on, certainly in the pediatric setting. And so I hope people will take a look and look into this resource. Joe, I just wanted to just say, this is definitely a situation where the right kind of education and the right kind of tools really make a difference.
Oh, this is absolutely invaluable. And this is a spot where you absolutely need the right information, and it's in an environment and a situation where you are most prone to error. So that's where it really pays off.
Joe, what do you have coming up next little while with Paragon? I know you've got some new training situations and scenarios set up with different organizations.
We do. We actually just finished two in a row, one in Rhode Island, one in Arkansas. We've got a couple things with military special ops coming up within the next month or so. And we're actually having a conversation about being at EMS Expo in Vegas. So I'll keep you posted on that one.
Fantastic. And where can folks find out more about how they can get a customized experience training for their service with Paragon?
Well, we ask them to give us a call or drop us an email. They can find us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com or on Facebook at Paragon Medical Group. And they can always reach us through the Disaster Podcast.
Fantastic. Sam, how about you? Where can folks find you?
Well, on social media under Sam Bradley 11 or Sam Bradley in the usual social media places. And certainly on our, something that Matt may be interested in is our wonderful Facebook community under Disaster Podcast. Jamie?
Yeah, definitely. And you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations. So look me up there. And of course, always at disasterpodcast.com, where there are links to subscribe to the show. We'd love to have you connect with us. And, it is not hard for you to find a way to get this episode delivered to you, whether it's by email, by your favorite podcatching app, or your favorite device. So definitely catch up with us there. Sam, I'm really glad we were able to talk to Matt tonight and find out about this great tool. It seems like another good one for the toolkit.
It certainly does. And we talk about disaster planning all the time, and although this isn't something we want to think about, it certainly could happen. The world is changing. So, yes, be prepared.
Absolutely. Thank you all for having me. And if you ever want to talk CBR and WMD again, please let me know. I'd be happy to come back.